Is everything all right, lover?
Memories of a jump nightmare swirled around his head. Even though the jump had been tough on him, Ryan was in top physical condition, and his ability to recover from the Matran's jumps was better than most in his small band of travelers. He'd experienced a bad jump dream, nothing more than that.
Been better, but I'm okay. You?
I've been worse.
Ryan believed that to be true. Her gorgeous mane of bright red hair, which usually lay flat against her head and shoulders after a jump, was full and thick, and cascaded over her shoulders like a waterfall. She gestured to her right with a nod.
Doc didn't do so well, though.
Ryan looked at Dr. Theophilus Algernon Tanner, a tall and skinny man dressed in an old and worn frock coat. To the casual observer, he appeared to be in his 60s, but it could be argued that the man was actually hundreds of years old. Ryan knelt next to Doc and put a hand on the man's shoulder.
You still with us, Doc?
Is this a dagger that
can you hear me, Doc?
Before me? The handle toward my hand?
J.B. Dix, the group's armorer and weapons expert, removed his spectacles and rubbed his head.
What's he talking about now?
It's Shakespeare. Macbeth, to be precise.
Sounds interesting.
Sounds crazy.
Jack Lauren usually fared the worst of all the members in the group after a jump, but this time he looked as if he came through unscathed. It was Doc who'd had the hardest ride. He'd be out of it for a while, his thoughts rambling and erratic, but he'd be all right in time. Ryan shook one of the old man's shoulders.
Are you all right?
What?
Doc shook his head as if the brain inside were shrouded in cobwebs. When he saw the one-eyed man standing over him, Doc gave Ryan an angry scowl.
Oh, I say, my dear Ryan, if you'd like my attention, I suggest you use the nomenclature provided for me upon my birth, meaning you can call me Theophilus, or Theo, if you like, or you can simply use the more vernacular terms Doc or Doc Tanner. There is no need to wrench my shoulder from my body.
Ryan grinned as Doc massaged his aching shoulder.
I'll take that as a yes.
Jack turned slowly to study the walls.
Where is this place?
Ryan looked around the chamber as well, but didn't recognize the purple-blue tint of the armorglass walls. The colors were similar to several chambers they'd been in before, but none had had this exact pattern or shading.
Only one way to find out for sure. Triple red, people.
Ryan put his left hand on the handle that would open the door to the chamber. For a moment, the inside of the chamber was filled with the sound of the friends' blasters being unholstered and cocked. Then, silence. Ryan turned the handle and pushed against the door. Slowly, it swung open. And then it stopped with a loud creak. At the same time, the stench of death wafted into the chamber.
Is it blocked?
Can't tell.
He pushed against the door and felt resistance. He stopped a moment, reset his feet, and tried it again. This time, with the help of JB and Jack, he was able to force open the door. Mildred, Christy, and Doc's blasters swept across the open doorway, but found no one outside the chamber waiting for them. Ryan and the others pushed the door all the way open. It came to an abrupt stop with a grinding halt, metal against metal, and it was obvious to them then why the door had been so hard to open. The steel had been bashed and scarred on the outside, and several of the hinges were gone, either torn away from the door or just smashed beyond recognition. Jack put the tip of his index finger into a large pit in the outside of the door.
Blastify?
Yeah, and maybe some grins. Recent, too.
And all other manner of weaponry as well.
There'd been a firefight in the redoubt, that much was obvious. There were blaster marks on the walls, and entire sections of floor and walls that had been scarred by blasters and who knew what else.
Dalt Redoubt's nuke-proof.
They are, but that's when the nukes go off on the outside. From the looks of this damage, there were bombs or grins going off in here.
Then how come the chamber wasn't damaged?
Ryan tried to close the door to the chamber, but it wouldn't swing back. He left the door where it was, hanging open at a strange angle.
Although the outside was blasted to hell, the inside wasn't damaged because nobody thought to open the door.
So it held together just long enough to receive one last band of jumpers.
Looks like it.
They inspected the outside of the chamber more closely for several moments until Christy called from a corner of the control room.
Ryan! Over here!
As Ryan made his way over to her, he became even more aware of the stench of rotting flesh.
Bodies. Lots of them.
There were at least a dozen bodies strewed across the floor near the wall. They'd been cut down by blaster fire and had died where they'd fallen. There were skeletons at the bottom of the mess, but some of the corpses on top didn't look that far gone. However, the eerie thing about the corpses was their features. Gray, scaly skin.
Muties.
Christy suddenly raised her hand, her hair tightly wound around her head and neck as an added indication of the danger. Seeing this, the rest of the friends went silent.
Someone's coming.
Ryan signaled the rest of them to scatter and find cover, and then he waited in silence for the sound of footsteps. At last, he could hear them, softly padding feet approaching their position at a modest rate, seemingly walking without purpose. And then he saw the source of the noises rounding the corner to the room surrounding the chamber. Or perhaps more correctly, saw it. It was a creature out of one of JB's nightmares that he had been having recently. The being was humanoid, but with scaly skin like the corpses. It was about 2 meters tall, scarred and dirty, and had glowing red eyes with slits for pupils. It saw the group, but didn't move or react in any way. Ryan stepped forward, and the rest of the friends followed, stepping out of the shadows, guns drawn. Muties usually attacked on sight, but this one seemed unusually calm, and in its red eyes could be seen the unmistakable look of intelligence. Intelligence and something else. Pain.
Can you understand me?
It didn't answer immediately. Instead, it just looked at him and cocked its head.
You got bag?
Ryan wasn't sure what the right answer was, so he didn't say anything.
What bag?
Ryan shook his head, and then looked to the rest of the friends for an answer. Mildred stepped forward.
Are you all right? Is someone you know hurt?
The creature just looked at Mildred with a confused expression.
What's bang?
Give me bang!
I'm sorry, but I haven't got any. And from the sounds of it, I don't think I want any either.
Give me bang!
What is wrong with you?
The mutie didn't answer. Instead, it ran toward Mildred and leapt into the air, a knife glinting in its hand. Half of its head vanished in a spray of blood-red mist. Mildred wiped a bit of the mutie's blood from her face.
Damn! Thanks, Jack.
Yes, well done, Master Lauren. Quick, decisive, and an expert shot as always.
What did it want?
Bang, whatever that is. I don't think it was hurting, though.
She knelt over the body and examined it.
Most of these scars have been healed over for weeks. The fresh ones look like it'd been picking at them.
Maybe it was crazy.
Well, whatever Bang is, it wanted it pretty bad.
Think it's a drug?
Mildred got up from beside the body.
That would be a good guess. I can't be sure, though, unless I performed an autopsy. And that's not happening.
Well, whatever it is, it's a good bet that there are more of these things in the redoubt.
Affirmative. Triple red, people.
The chatter going on behind Ryan died down, and his companions followed him through the redoubt in silence. As they moved up and down stairs, along corridors and through holes blasted in the walls, they could find nothing of value left inside the redoubt, and no evidence of anyone else living inside it. Most items left behind had been destroyed, or had otherwise been rendered useless. 2 sections of the redoubt that had been cleaned out were the medical lab and the kitchen. Everything inside those rooms had been carted away, with pipes and wires neatly cut from the walls rather than torn out in a hurry. Somebody was making use of the equipment, and likely using it for more than making meals and treating the sick. They continued searching the redoubt for anything of value, and as they turned the corner at the end of a long corridor, Ryan saw a light in the distance. It was dimly reflected and had to be checked out.
Jack, see where that leads.
Without a word, Jack headed down the corridor toward the light. The others had their blasters trained on the end of the hallway, covering him just in case. They watched the teen's body get smaller and smaller until all that could be seen was his stark white hair growing brighter the closer he got to the light source. And then all of a sudden it was gone as he turned the corner into the light. A few minutes later he reemerged, and when he neared, it was obvious that he had some good news. He gestured down the hall.
Outside, sky, rolling fields, river, but no people.
Anything else?
What more want?
Ryan and the others walked toward the light and exited the redoubt to a hot, sunny day, the sky tinged by a slight purple hue with streaks of green and orange throughout. The surrounding fields were barren or else overgrown by weeds, but they seemed to roll with the irregular undulation of foothills, suggesting they might be somewhere in the Midwest. Jack tapped Ryan on the shoulder and pointed to the south.
River, near trees.
JB took out his brass telescope from a pocket in his coat, extended it to its full length, and brought the lens up to his eye. making several adjustments to focus.
About an hour away on foot. We can make camp there. Maybe catch something to eat in the river.
Sounds like a plan.
And then, without another word, the friends were off, heading south in single file to cover their tracks in the earth, Ryan leading the way, JB bringing up the rear. They didn't know what to expect, but as long as they were together, they would be ready for anything. Harlan Robards, sec chief of Demandville, lay in his bed next to one of the serving wenches he'd slept with the night before, and daydreamed of how he was going to overthrow Baron Demand. This particular woman was the one he liked the best. That was to say that she was the one he tolerated the most of the many women he had his way with. Of course, he doubted he'd be this tolerant of the slut if she wasn't jacked up on his bang.
So, tell me again how much fun we're gonna have once you're in charge of this place, honey.
That Baron is such a pussy. He tries to look like he's all tough and knows what's going on here, but I can skim off him and make my own junk without him even knowing. How fucking pathetic is that?
Can I have some more bang, baby?
All the bang you want, sweetheart. Once this ville's renamed Robards Town.
But I want some now, Chief.
For some reason, the way the woman said now annoyed Robards. Even though she was high as a kite, the serving wench noticed his abrupt change in attitude and silenced herself as well.
Well, I can't wait until that day comes.
It was a poor choice of words. Although it wasn't what she meant, it sounded like she was still pressuring him for bang. She lifted her arms up to deflect the chief's blow she knew was coming, but luckily for her, a sec man burst through the door and distracted Robards' attention from her.
Sir, I just received a scouting report. Baron Demand's woman and her mother have left the ville. We think they're trying to escape.
Damn it! I knew I never should have trusted that woman. Let's organize a search party and find them.